Hey, it's Chaos Queen here, and you're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hey, it's Mistress Carrie, and you are listening to Studio 2009.
I don't know what to do anymore, so... Star Wars.
I was kind of interested in the idea of the Acolyte, and then I heard about, like, everybody's talking about Episode 3. Episode 3 is, like, the big bomb.
Okay.
Because that's when you get all the, like, that's the flashback one with all the information. That's where you get, and it reminds me of the book that made me stop reading the Expanded Universe, because it was such shit.
Okay.
Because it's like, the two main characters come from this coven of lesbian witches who worship the Force, but it's not the Force. It's better than the Force. It's the thread. It's the thread that ties everything. And it's like, just, dude. Once you get, like, my concept is better than George Lucas's concept for Star Wars, it's like, okay, this is fanfic bullshit. I'm done. May the thread be with you. Fuck off. But it's like a thread because you can pull on it and make it do what you want. And it's like, mm-hmm. Oh, Jesus God. Why?
I am still stuck in 2010, 2011 as far as streaming goes. I will not watch any series on Netflix, Disney Plus, whatever.
Oh, that's until, weird. Okay.
No, hold on.
Okay, fair.
Not finished. I will not watch any series on any of these platforms until all episodes are online. I want to binge it. I don't want to have to... Streaming is not what TV used to be. Streaming is not supposed to be, in my personal opinion, what, you know, you watch a TV show on ABC, NBC, whatever, you'll wait a week until the next show. No, this is the 21st friggin' century.
Yeah, wasn't that like a weird, like, retro thing that Disney did? Like, Netflix always used to, like, dump it all at once, and then suddenly
yeah.
Disney was like, no, we're gonna make you wait.
Yeah, and yeah, okay. Disney did it, and then everybody else has picked up on it. So, yeah, I will just wait the 6 weeks or the 9 weeks or the whatever weeks or whatever, if we're even covering the Acolyte, whatever.
We are not. You can. I mean, it's not Star Wars. At the end of the day, like, it's apparently it's Frozen meets Kill Bill. It's Leslie Headland's, like, working out her emotional issues with her sister. Like, that's what it is. And then it's got a little bit of, like it's got kind of, it's got people with lightsaber. Like, dude, mm-hmm. Like, fucking Carrie Ann Moss. And this is in the first 3 minutes, so this is not a spoiler. This
okay,
is literally
fine.
The first three fucking minutes of the yep. show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know how, like, What's-Her-Face got stabbed with a lightsaber and lived, and then yep. other What's-Her-Face got stabbed with a lightsaber and lived, and, like, people have been getting stabbed left and right with lightsabers. Carrie Ann Moss gets killed with a fucking paring knife.
Oh my god!
But it's a throwing knife. It's a little tiny knife.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wait, these motherfuckers are getting boiled alive by, like, high plasma energy weapons and just survive with a little scar on their tummy,
mm-hmm.
and Trinity gets fucking murked with a little tiny carving knife.
She should have used her Matrix powers, damn it.
She used her Matrix powers. Like, the whole fight is Matrix powers, and then she.
Really?
Now you don't use your lightsaber unless you mean to kill. And people are like,
oh my
god!
When
is Star Wars
when
was back?
That, yeah, like when is the that's revisionist history right there. The whole Acolyte thing is revisionist history because didn't you tell me it takes place like 100 years before
Yavin?
100 years
before the Phantom Menace.
Oh, the Phantom Menace. Okay, well, whatever. Yeah, the beginning of the beginning, and it's
beginning
like,
of the beginning. Yeah, it's the Jedi. Well, like, it's funny because, like, the Jedi are the quote bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear what they did, and it's like, but they didn't do anything. Like okay, Episode 3 is a flashback. That's where you find out the twin sisters, their backstory.
Okay.
They're raised by this coven of lesbian witches who worship the thread. And the one girl wants to be a Jedi, and the other girl does not want to be a Jedi. And the Jedi show up and say, hey, you've got, you know, these four sensitive girls, and we're going to take them.
Mm-hmm.
But first we're going to give them a test. And then, so the little girls, like, the one girl doesn't want to... So she tries to convince her sister to throw the test. And the sister doesn't, like, somehow the sister doesn't throw the test or something, so they find out, the Jedi find out that the girls are force sensitive, and they're going to take them. So the one little girl, the girl who's the murderer, Mm-hmm. She basically, I guess the sister had like a book where she wrote in her dreams of becoming a Jedi. So the murderer girl sets the book on fire, somehow burns down the entire village, kills all the coven of the witches. Apparently they did not use the thread to like save their own lives. Like they didn't pull on the thread hard enough to not be burned to death. And then she falls down a hole, so they think she died. So this whole thing's her getting revenge for a thing that she kind of did herself.
Yeah.
Like, and having watched the Obi-Wan series, I know this is absolutely going to be, they're going to portray her as the victim. It's going to be surprise, surprise, the murderer is actually the victim. I'm like, that stupid bitch set her own family on fire. Like, the Jedi didn't do that.
That's kind of like the Netflix movie that I watched a while ago, The Podcast Murders. The same exactly what you just said, except the host of the podcast, the girl that's the host of the podcast, is the one that's actually doing the murders. And it's like, oh, God. Really? I wasted my 2 hours on that. And this is supposed to be 8 episodes? How?
I don't even know, because like she's...
No,
she's
I'm looking at the thing right now. I'm looking at the...
No, but she's killing... She's like, what I'm telling you is there are 4 Jedi that she's out to kill.
Mm-hmm.
By the 3rd episode, 2 of them are already dead.
Jeez.
So I'm like, where are you going with this? And then they find out the sister twist by the end of the 1st episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even a mystery. It's just like, oh, wait. The
Yeah.
Because they were like, well, she did it because she's the one. And then like, wait, no, she can't because she was in custody. So it must be the sister. It's like, what is the point of any of this? Where are you going?
I have zero interest in this.
Just it sounds like garbage.
Yeah, I don't have. Yeah, we will. Well, you already said it. We won't be covering this.
Look. I don't know if you saw my post on Facebook yesterday about the stupid HasLab cantina.
Oh, no, I got to look
at that. They're doing the HasLab cantina, and I'm like, I don't need that. And then it's like, but they're going to have the Tanaka sister.
But they're going to have the Tanaka. Fuck. Yeah, yep, fuck, you need it. Yep.
Fuck. Well, yeah, but like, and at the same time, I'm thinking, you know, that comes out in 2026, I think, is when we're going to get it. And those figures were never going to be made. They were literally like Hasbro just, it's almost like an impossible thing. It's like getting the next fucking Game of Thrones book. Like, right. It's never going to happen. And yep. Then this thing that's never going to happened. And I'm like, that's actually probably a pretty good note to go out on. You know, like you get the figures that could not be gotten and then you mm-hmm. just call it a day. So I think my time with Star Wars is rapidly coming to an end.
Yeah, I think mine is as well.
I still hold out hope for Andor season 2.
Right. Like, yeah. Obviously, that's a little different, but yeah.
And again, it's different. Like it was so different that like you know, you kind of go, I just hope Kathleen Kennedy paid no attention to all the press and hype that it got after the fact. Like mm-hmm. ignore it, leave it alone.
Mm-hmm.
Let Tony Gilroy do what he wants.
Yep.
Him is good. You is bad. Go away.
Yes, exactly.
But bounty hunting is a complicated profession.
There is nothing wrong with your podcast player. Do not attempt to adjust the volume. Hello and welcome back into our studio. You are now inside Studio 2009. I'm, of course, TFU and Mike. Joining me once again, almost as always, is Mr. David Draper. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Yeah. I'm actually doing a little better than I've been doing recently, so.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah, it is really good. it's been a rough couple of months.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm right there with you. But today we head once again to a galaxy far, far away. That's right. We continue the 12 months of Star Wars Spotlight here in Studio 2009 as we make our way past the Skywalker saga for now. Today we will be discussing The Mandalorian Season 1.
Yay.
Yay. I love this.
Yeah.
Like I when I first saw the trailers or the teasers or whatever, I'm like, cool. Finally, something that has nothing to do with Jedis.
Yeah. I mean, that's true.
It does, but like the center character.
Eventually, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, eventually, kind of, yeah, sort of. But like specifically, for the most part, there's hints of what's left of the Empire and the Sith and the Jedi are in hiding or whatever the hell.
Well, they're not in hiding. They're just not like readily available because because Dave Filoni hasn't gotten he's directed a lot of the episodes actually. Mm-hmm. I was surprised about that, but like I don't think he's been heavily involved in the writing process. So right now there's still one Jedi.
Yeah.
As opposed to like the dozen or so that like somehow survived, even though y'all got wiped out. Whatever.
For season one, Dave only actually wrote episode 5, which was The Gunslinger.
Yeah, but he directed a lot of them.
Okay, you're right. Absolutely.
Filoni wrote most of the – like I was – this is the thing that surprised me because mm-hmm. in my head, you know, I was like, oh, Filoni wrote and directed all of them. Or not Filoni, Favreau.
Favreau, yeah.
I thought Favreau directed a lot more of them than he did.
Yeah.
And, you know, like – I think Filoni's one of those guys who he seems like a pretty competent director.
He
like,
is.
I don't hate his writing even. I think he's a guy that gets a little too in love with his own stuff.
Yeah,
that could happen. To the detriment of other things.
That could
specifically
happen.
Ahsoka Tano. I think he just
loves
that character so much that she's always got to be in everything, and you know. She's not quite a Mary Sue, but like just
We haven't gone back and done the animation yet, which we probably will over on Tooncast at some point in the future.
That's a Tooncast problem.
Yeah, I know. I'm gonna make you a cartoon one of these days.
I like cartoons.
Good. But for season one specifically, at least according to Wikipedia, which take a grain of salt, Dave directed chapter one and chapter five. He wrote chapter five.
Which is a good episode.
Right, The Gunslinger. Yeah, it's a good episode. Jon Favreau wrote the first four. The story for six was done by Christopher Yost. And then the teleplay was done by Yost and Rick Famo. I can't pronounce Rick's last name. I'm sorry, Rick. But yeah, Mandalorian, I like that this is set where it's set. And I was thinking about this leading up to us starting these recordings for the three seasons of this show. I love in Star Wars that you can fit in certain things without causing other things to be that have already happened. Like, I love I know you're not a social media person, but I go on Instagram all the time and I watch the reels where Sam Witwer is like, yeah, I had to correct Dave Filoni on this because this happened here and this, and all these clips are like, you out Star Wars Dave Filoni? And he's like, yep, I did. And he just laughs about it, whatever else. But it's like, I like being able, like, I've been wanting something like this since 1988 when I first saw Return of the Jedi. I was 8 years old then. I was 3 when it came out, so it took me a while. Plus, back then, VHSs took at least a year and a half to come out from the point.
If that,
From a year and a half to 2 years.
Like a little earlier, back in the early 80s, it was a little like longer and more complicated. And they price to own was not a thing.
No, it was not.
One of the biggest fights I ever had with my mother was trying to get her to buy a copy of Empire Strikes Back for me.
Yeah,
which she never did. So,
yeah, whatever the year was, and I have the VHS copies over here.
Oh, I do now. I do now.
As a 63-year-old
with disposable income.
But I'm saying like these aren't my original copies that I had as a kid, but I remember by 88, 89, my grandmother had gotten me the original three. I'm saying this more for the audience than it is for you, because you know. The black box, the Empire box, Jedi. Yeah, all that.
Those.
So
I have those.
Yep,
my original copies, every 5 seconds, the Showtime logo pops up on the bottom of the screen.
Oh, no.
Remember Showtime?
Yep.
No, nobody does.
Showtime's still around.
Showtime's still around?
Oh, yeah. They've had a few big series over the last few years. Was it Showtime? No, it was Stars. It wasn't Showtime. But anyway, that's beside the
point.
It's I'm mixing my cable companies here, folks. But The Mandalorian, season one, 8 episodes. I really like this. I thought this was fun.
I it's funny because as a Star Wars fan, I'm a little weird because I never loved Boba Fett. I was not a huge Boba Fett fan. I mean, people know me, know I love Bosk, the Reptilian bounty hunter, because I'm a huge dinosaur nut. But like, I was never like I know a lot of Star Wars fans are like huge Boba Fett. So it was like the idea of, I mean, even though he's not Boba Fett, you know, he's it's the same, you know, he's got the armor, he's got the gadgets. It's a Boba Fett show without Boba Fett. And so I was like, but I like the idea of a bounty hunter. I'm like you. I wanted to move away from the Jedi stuff. I was never like, it's weird. I didn't like Boba Fett and I didn't like the Jedi. I have no idea why I even like Star Wars. Like I loved Han Solo and I loved the Millennium Falcon. Like, if we had a show about a smuggler and his sort of anthropomorphic pet best friend, you know, that would make me happy. I loved that, because I, as a kid, I grew up, and I would get up and I would get ready for school and I would come downstairs, and because I'm setting this up because like I'm not old enough to have watched them first run,
right?
But back in the day, a lot of networks reran really old shows for like cost saving measures.
Yep.
And I would watch like The Lone Ranger, before I had to go get to the bus stop. Mm-hmm. And I love those old westerns. I love those old, and that's what Mandalorian is like. At least the first season and a half are like is the old. I mean, it's Lone Wolf and Cub. It's literally Lone Wolf and Cub, but it's an old western. They don't really do much with the premise. I mean, he only goes from town to town like twice, like Sanctuary, and I think there's another one where he but like I love that idea. That was a great idea for a Star Wars series. Guy goes from planet to planet and he gets involved in a local thing and he never stays behind. He never falls, it's a classic motif.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I didn't like when he went back to Navarro, and then in season two, he kept going back to Navarro, and then in season three, rewatching it this time around, there was a lot like, here's Navarro.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what's her name, Cara Dune. Like I was never a huge Cara Dune fan. Moff Gideon, I'm like, oh, this guy gets really old like really quick. Like, he's kind of funny the first season, and then like just he's super tiresome by the third season, I thought. My opinion. I like Juan Carlos Esposito. Like, I think he's a good actor, but I also I feel like at this point, I remember they were talking him up for casting for the X-Men movie, and I was like, I would rather he be if they were going to do it, I'd rather he be Professor X and Magneto, because I think he needs to be something other than the stylish, intelligent villain. Like, he's done that and done Breaking Bad and The Boys and Mandalorian. Like you need, because I actually remember him from the first time I ever saw him was in Homicide: Life on the Street, the final season. He played Yaphet Kotto's son.
Interesting.
Yeah, because the thing is that Yaphet Kotto's character was supposed to be half Italian, half African, and Juan Carlos Esposito actually is half African, half Italian. So like that's where I knew him from before Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm.
But it's undeniable that he had this amazing turn on Breaking Bad. But I'm just like I like, by the time he shows up on Mandalorian, he's basically doing the Juan Carlos Esposito character with a little Darth Vader thrown in, because they make jokes about him killing everybody left and right.
Like his own people.
I particularly love the early episodes where it's just Mando and Grogu and they're going from place to place, and it's very old school western. And then there's a really heavy Empire Strikes Back feeling to it, because, obviously he is, Mando is a Boba Fett armor.
Mm-hmm.
Grogu is a little baby Yoda.
Yep.
Quill is an Ugnaught. IG-11, that's the heaviest aesthetic from, I mean, I know the thugs were more like Return of the Jedi, Jabba's, like, I think they were kind of, and they weren't weak ways, but they were like, I think they were Nyctos and Platoonians. But like, I wish they had kept it that way. I wish it had just been a space western where he goes from planet to planet and he never settles down and he gets involved in local blah, blah, blahs.
Yeah.
And, you know, he makes the thing a better place and then he moves on.
Yep.
Like, and instead it slowly became more and more Filoni porn.
Yeah.
The planet Mandalore was destroyed in season blah of Clone Wars or Rebels and what's her name and the thing and the dark, like when the Darksaber showed up, I was like, oh, okay. Here we go. And I think season two kind of, I was worried about it in season two, and I think season two held up well enough on its own. And then by season three, it was Clone Wars, Rebels, season whatever. You know, it was not Din Djarin's story anymore.
Yeah. Well, we will get to season two and season
three.
I know.
But you can't go back and rewatch it without seeing it through that lens. Like, and that's one of the interesting things about that show is, you know, I had a lot of friends who came to it late.
Mm-hmm.
And they were always like, well, I don't understand what the big deal is. And it's hard to explain, because I watched it when it premiered.
Right.
And it's hard to explain, like, as a lifelong Star Wars fan, how hard Baby Yoda hit. Because Yoda, I mean, they had Yaddle, which, you know, and if you notice, Yaddle disappears after Phantom Menace. Like,
yep.
And they never really mention her again. They have her in Tales of the Jedi, which is a good segment. But, like, Yoda always felt special. You know, that you don't know what his species is named. You don't know what planet he's from. Like, is he from Dagobah? Is he from somewhere else? You know, he's always been kind of special. Like, they've never, you know, have a million Yodas. And, you know, it's like Greedo's a Rodian, and there's, like, a billion Rodians. And, you know, like, this guy has, you know, the Towels that have had their thing in Clone Wars. He's always been sort of kept special. And then there was a little baby Yoda. And it was magical. And it hit pretty hard. And then by the time that people got around to seeing it, it's like, okay, so it's a baby Yoda. I've seen the toys. that was another thing is they deliberately held back on the merchandising, which is unusual. And I remember getting in an argument with someone from a toy company who had worked for Hasbro. And they said, oh, they should have absolutely had those toys ready to go. And I was like, you know, if those had leaked out, that would have ruined that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, well, they're not going to leak out. They can't. And then they can't, you know, you can have security. You can, you know, it's not going to leak out. And then right after that, Snake Eyes from G.I. Joe Classified leaked out. literally, like, they were shipping it in. And someone got a hold of the case and was like, look, they're making 6-inch G.I. Joes.
Yep.
And you know, and I think the other attitude was, well, so it ruined it. And I'm like, but the show, I think what people have forgotten is that the media drives everything else.
Yeah.
Well, I think Disney's forgotten. Disney's like, well, we've got money coming in from the cruise ships. We've got money coming in from the theme parks. So we can kind of do whatever we want. Like, and it's like, no, you needed that moment. You need that magic. You need that, because then when you get that dopamine hit of, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, this blew my mind.
Mm-hmm.
You come back for season two. You come back for the next episode. You're hope you want to see what they do next.
Yeah.
You want to see what they do next. And it's like, you know, so I think it was a smart move. I think Favreau was right to fight to not let that moment be ruined.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you know, famously, Werner Herzog was the guy who was like they were like, well, we might replace the puppet with some CGI. And he's like, it would be foolish to replace this adorable creature with computer animation. It would be madness. You must let the puppet be. Like, so they kept it a puppet, which was smart. Because he's an adorable little snot rag.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll discuss this a little. I mean, I don't really have to discuss it. I'll say this now, and I'll say it again when we get to see. I think it's either late season two or early season three, whenever the hell it was. Because I don't remember, and that's the thing. Like, I'm like you. I watched the. For me, I was like, ooh, the Mandalorian. Like, Disney Plus was just happening, or just whatever it had just
it was
started.
Like the first
and
thing
then,
they did. The first
yeah,
thing
yeah, yeah, yeah. The first big thing they did, November 12th, 2019, is when Chapter One came out, and I was like, ooh, interesting. No Jedi. Let me see what this is, and like you, probably more so than you, I actually have an abhorrent hate for Boba Fett. I can't stand that stupid-ass character. I'm glad the Sarlacc ate him, sort of, even though the Sarlacc spit him up.
It didn't stick.
Yeah, it didn't stick. But it's just one of those things where he, as a kid, I wanted to be either the good guys or the bad guys with the laser swords. I didn't care about the guns. I didn't care about the jetpacks as a kid in the 80s. Unless they were Transformers, that's a whole other subject. So for me, Boba Fett didn't have enough. And even I've rewatched those. You do it. Everybody else does it. We've rewatched those old films all the time, every once in a while. Every time I rewatch the original trilogy, even this last time that we did, I still don't care about Boba Fett because he doesn't have enough to do in the films because there's so much in the films that you can't fit him in. Like, he does one cool thing, and then
they kind of, like, the prequels undermine that.
Yeah, okay.
You know, he figures out Han's trick.
Yep.
But then in Attack of the Clones, like, they kind of established that Obi-Wan had pulled that, and that's why he kind of knew to look for it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like the one real – because in Return of the Jedi, he does not have a good showing. He gets taken out by a blind man with a stick.
Yep.
Like, the most powerful bounty hunter in the world.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so I do not – like, and this is why I like Din Djarin and The Mandalorian, whatever. Yes, it is technically Boba Fett's armor-ish, but I like that it's not fucking green. I know that's so stupid and so whatever, but I'm just so happy it's silver or blue or different. I know blue was
– It was brown initially, and then he got the Beskar armor.
Yeah, and then he got the Beskar armor on. But no, I've never been a big fan of Western films, even as a kid. I thought they were too slow. Okay. It's just the way I was, I guess. But this, like you said, space Western, and there's more action in this, and I just really dug it. I really like the Din Djarin character. I like how he eventually basically adopts the little Baby Yoda thing. It was just fun. Star Wars was fun again for me in season one of this show.
Yeah. My biggest problem with those early episodes is I got confused because I always thought, like, I didn't realize there were Jawas on other planets. Like, okay. I never heard the lore that they spread out all over the place. So I was like, is this Tatooine? And then it turned out it wasn't. I was like, this is weird. Because I love the sequence where he's chasing the Sandcrawler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was fun. But I'm is this Tatooine?
No, unfortunately not.
And I remember the first time the Blurg showed up. I was like, Blurgs! Blurgs! Battle for Endor's canon! Woo!
Yay! Absolutely. And this does say the gunslinger was on Tatooine. So.
Well, no, gunslinger was on Tatooine. That was Mos Eisley. Okay. Yeah, he says it's going to the. Yeah, no, yeah. But the.
The early episode. I forget
the name of the planet, but like the planet that they find Grogu on, where Quill
is not
Tatooine. In fact, the action figure is called something that like non native Jawa or something.
Yeah.
And it was just weird. Well, because it was weird because they had a Sandcrawler, because the lore on Sandcrawlers is that they were mining machines that were sent to Tatooine and were abandoned.
Yeah.
So it was just weird. It was just like, I was like, it was less that there were Jawas and more that there was a Sandcrawler. I know I'm getting...
Technical.
I'm getting technical because Blurgs are from Endor. It's okay.
Yep.
You know,
it's okay. I think with these little things, and I don't mean little because three seasons and 24 episodes is not little, but and the funny thing is, I also wanted to bring this up. We'll talk about this a little bit later, but TV when we were growing up versus TV now, like, holy crap, like 24 episodes for three seasons, that would be one season 40 years ago.
Yeah, like, I did a rewatch of Deep Space Nine last fall because I'd always heard it was, not really a rewatch, like an actual watch, because I only seen a couple episodes. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it goes on, like, the show, like, seasons went on forever. Like, they had, like, 20 episodes a season. It was ridiculous. Yep. Which is why you had so many, like, you know, there's the famous trope of, like, everybody remembers what happened, and they show the famous clip episode,
mm-hmm.
which every season had, or, like, and then they had what were called the bottle episodes, where it's like, oh no, the doors are all stuck. So I guess we sit here and talk to each other for an episode, you know. But yeah, you're right. Like nowadays, it's more of a British style, where they have like a few episodes and they call it a series.
Yeah.
Like Sherlock has like seasons of Sherlock are like three episodes long. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. And for me, I always look at the fiction first, whatever the story is telling. I didn't know what was going on. I knew, but I didn't know and didn't really put anything into the actual story of this show as far as what was going on with Gina Carano in the background and behind the scenes and all this and all that. Cara Dune was an all right character. I don't think we really superly needed her here, but she was okay. I didn't dislike her.
Just that was never like even it's funny because that's the episode that delivers what I wanted the most from this series, which is the classic gunslinger comes to town and, you know, solves the problem and moves on. And the school marm like looks after him longingly.
Yep.
And it was probably my least favorite episode. Like, it's weird. It gave me everything. And I was just like, I remember not being super impressed with her at the time, the character.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, there's the often memed bit about they have an AT-ST. We've got nothing on this planet that can stop that. And I always go full Obadiah Stane where it's like, Ewoks took those things out with rocks and a stick.
Yep.
In the cave.
Yeah. Sorry. Jeff Bridges, gotta love him.
Tony Stark was able to build this in a cave with a box of scrap.
It's like, what are you talking about, woman? Like, you're a rebel commando. You must have heard about what happened on Endor.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that they were, like, obviously the main story is Mando and Grogu and what they're doing, but I liked that little side story with her and her background, and I think that was fun. I think that was cool. Because, again, it's edges of what is going on past the end of the supposed story at the end of Jedi, so this is...
Yeah. You know, but, you know, it also, like, rewatching it, because I think I missed a lot of details the first time I watched it.
Mm-hmm.
It also is that, it also begins that creep of the New Republic being really flawed.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, like, my problem with that is intellectually, that's probably what would happen. Like, I mean, you know, we're old enough to have seen actual regime changes throughout the world. And usually they're pretty messed up, and they're you know it's like they're just as bad as the regimes they took over from, and it's realistic that the New Republic would probably suck, but this is a movie about space wizards and laser swords, and like you see the end of Return of the Jedi and you want goodness and rightness and the New Republic to be good, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And the fact that it sucks and they're idiots. I mean, Michael Jordan meme, I take that personally. Like, you know, and I think that was part of the problem. I feel that one of the problems with the prequels is that we went into that with our prejudgment of what the Jedi were.
Right.
And I think an essential part of the story, even though it's not really fleshed out very well, is the idea that the Jedi were flawed. And I don't think George Lucas made a really good job of explaining that. I mean, there's like a line of dialogue in Attack of the Clones. Because, I mean, the prophecy is the Jedi, that Anakin's going to wipe out the Jedi and the Sith.
Yeah.
And you go, why? Like, why do they both need to be wiped out? Like this is kind of important information, and I'd like to... It's not that I hate the idea of it, but I'd like to know. You know, I'd like to know what the deal is. And I think we as the audience go, but we're told that the Jedis are good guys and heroic and noble. So when we see these flawed, you know, like the idea that they treated Anakin badly, it's treated as a flaw. It's a, when it really probably was like part, it was essential part of the story.
Yeah.
Like, so it's just like, I think they're like, so the idea of the Republic being the New Republic kind of sucking, it's realistic, but as an audience member, it's not what I wanted. Like, I wanted a good New Republic. We went through all this. All these people died. All these people suffered. You know, planets got blown up. Like, for what? For Tim Meadows to be in charge of galactic security and be easily duped by an obvious agent of the bad guys? Like, this is you know, and then the stuff in Ahsoka was infuriating. Like, the Council of Stupids. Yeah.
Yeah, see, folks, you guys can go back to episode whatever number it is. I'll throw it in the show notes eventually. But when we did the Ahsoka series, that's the problem, is that everybody else, including George himself, even though he sold his shit, everybody's got their hand in the pot, and everybody wants, like Dave specifically. You know, I like Dave. I don't know. I've never met him personally. Not you, Dave. The other Filoni. You know, I like him. I think he's cool. I think he has cool ideas. I did at the time that this came out. At the time of season one came out, I actually went back and I watched the Clone Wars movie, and I basically marathoned the entirety of the original cartoon series that they did, where Ahsoka shows up and blah, blah, blah. And I like that character. I just don't think you have to bring all, like you said earlier in the podcast, this first season was the space Western gunslinger, blah, 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 planet to planet, self-adventures. It was whatever. And then by season two and three, which we will get to, then they bring the Star Wars-iness of it in, and it ruins it. There are some really good moments, really good moments in season two and season three, and we will get to those. But overall, as a story, they had something good, and then they fucked it up.
Yeah. I don't disagree. And to kind of go back to my rant a little bit. I think why they did – I mean, the reason why they did that is because there would be no drama. Yeah. Like the problem with continuing the story is there always has to be an antagonist. There always has to be drama. Mm-hmm. And if the New Republic was competent and good, then they wouldn't be getting in the way of the – you know, this is why when we get to the sequel trilogy, they just wipe out the New Republic immediately.
Yeah.
Just bang, boom, and they're gone. Because they needed everything to get to a status quo. Like, because the resistance is the resistance before the New Republic is gone. So who are they resisting? Like, you know, there's just a lot of stuff of like, plot contrivance and convenience. And I think Star Wars, the weird thing about Star Wars is it's a very expansive universe, as I think season one of Mandalorian proves.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that it told a very complete self-contained story. Yeah. And so the trick is to find the way to tell stories within this big universe beyond the Skywalker saga was mm-hmm. told and wrapped up, and then Disney was like, okay, let's retell it again. Instead of you know, and I think Mandalorian was the way to go. These little side stories, this Western mm-hmm. in space, you know.
And a character we had never seen before. Characters in the story plot.
Yes.
We had never seen I don't remember, and you can correct me because you're more
But the thing
whatever,
is, they did it in a way that, like, so we've got Din Djarin, who looks like Boba Fett, so fans go, this is a thing I remember, but it's a new character.
Yeah,
you've got Grogu, who looks like Yoda. It's like,
but
this
it's
is a
new
thing
character.
I remember, but it's a different character. So they've got their own arcs and their own things that they can do. And, you know, yes. So it's familiar, but it's the perfect. It's what, in a way, it's what every sequel writer dreams of, which is more of the same but different.
Mm-hmm.
And they pulled it off once, and then they just let all their continuity start to like seep in and like gunk it up.
Yeah, unfortunately, and that's what sucks about it. And like, you know, I like Din Djarin on his adventures with IG-11, with Grogu, with all this stuff. I think that's cool and fun. I like him kind of, sort of, maybe, coming back to Nevarro every once in a while to see Apollo Creed.
Like, you know, I loved
in a while. But, like, yeah.
Yeah, I loved Apollo Creed. I loved, I want to get his name right, because I feel bad, because he passed away recently.
Carl Weathers.
Chief
Karger. Yep.
Yeah, like the thing I loved about Carl Weathers, and I loved about Werner Herzog, is, you know, George Lucas, and I know he didn't write the shows, but like he's famous for this really kind of clunky, terrible dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about Carl Weathers, and there's something about Werner Herzog that they could actually like say these lines, and there's something about the delivery that makes it work. And I don't know what it was, but I love that. They'd say these clunky Star Wars lines, and just it worked.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
It's not necessary to have libations at the end of an endeavor.
And that's a Star Wars character that we are going to remember. Like, that's,
yes,
you know, the way that they acted. See, look, writing is great, right? You can write, I could write, everybody else in the world, you can write something, but in order for it to be brought to life in a visual way, whether animation, video game, or live action, whatever, you have to have people that can actually act in these roles. You have to think, oh, Greef Karga, he's this character, he's this type, but also it's for Carl Weathers, so people like me who are just going to say, hey, look, it's Apollo Creed in Star Wars. It's more than that, but like you need to have in really good actors. This first season, it's essentially stacked. I had never heard of Pedro Pascal before. This is the first time I'd ever seen him in anything.
I think the same thing, yeah.
Carl Weathers, we know. Werner Herzog, we know. Nick Nolte is the voice
of Quill, yeah.
I'm like, oh my god, it's the Prince of Tides, but it's an alien. Holy crap. But it was cool. It was awesome. You know, you get, I know some people think Taika Waititi is over, he's blown over or overblown or whatever. And again, Gina Carano, first time I had ever seen her in any, that's why I love Mando season one. The only person besides the ones the ones I already mentioned, plus you got Giancarlo Esposito as Moff Gideon. But the rest of it is like all like, oh, I'm really interested to see how these actors do these characters that I've never, like, these are all new. That was what was great about season one of the show. It's all new. It's all different Star Wars, and it has nothing to do with the goddamn Jedi or the Sith. Not for the most part. I mean, there are hints.
The force is in there, but like, you know, at some point, like, you know, you got a baby Yoda. He's got to be good with the force.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. And I felt season one was well acted. I love, is it Amy Sedaris?
Yeah. Is she the girl, but you're talking about the one from the, from Mos Eisley.
Mechanic? Yeah. Yeah. The one that's
with the droids.
Yeah. Her. Oh, I loved it. I absolutely, that was hilarious. She was kind of like a little school marm with the little droid hats and touch his head, it'll activate, it'll go away, whatever. And then she has to take care of Grogu, or sort of, kind of. She doesn't know how, but whatever. But I love her.
She sort of takes it on herself to take care of Grogu.
Well, right, yeah, because of what happens. But, like, I like that character. And that's why I am loving season, like, first time I watched it back in 2019, which was, oh God, so long ago now. Ow, my head hurts. And when I rewatched it a couple weeks ago, in order for us to do this, these 8 episodes are some of my favorite Star Wars. Yeah, they each have their own issues, and we can nitpick them, whatever.
Oh, well, but nothing is perfect. Like, there's, no, I don't no, think no. there's a th- yeah. yeah. Like, I love, like, I actually, you know, I think The Gunslinger might be my favorite episode. Mm-hmm. And I love them. I absolutely love the moment when they get like surprised by the Tusken Raiders, mm-hmm. and Din is doing like the sign language and talking to them. That is such a like a more modern Western classic thing of, because the Sand People are obviously the Native Americans. They're the, you know, the dangerous tribes. Yep. But he's talking to them and bargaining with them, and meanwhile the kid is like wants to go for his gun because he's stupid. Mm-hmm. Just start, like, but I, you know, because I love developing, you know, like, because the Tusken Raiders had always been a part of Star Wars,
right?
But like, they've never really been developed.
And, no, like, they were side villains. They were
minor antagonists.
Yeah.
Just stuff like that. And just the fact that Jin's response is his immediate response was to deal with them, not just start shooting, not to kill them.
Yeah.
But like that you got it, like, you know, he knew what to do.
Yeah. You had to interact with those characters. You could not.
Yeah, you couldn't just blast
shoot
through
them. Yeah, yeah, no. I mean, there are moments where you can blast your way through things, folks, but that wasn't one of them. You had to actually use your brain, and he did. And it was awesome. I love that they were able to get Clancy Brown as the Berg.
Oh, that is my favorite episode.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't realize it was Clancy. Like, first time I saw it, I didn't realize it was Clancy Brown. I mean, because I was more like the Twilight girl. I was like, I like him crazy. So I was like, hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
And then when the credits rolled and it said Clancy Brown, I literally yelled
because
he's my favorite. That guy, you know, you know, the guy who shows up in everything. He's my favorite because he was in Ahsoka too.
But yeah,
had a kind of crummy nothing role, but like he's my favorite. That guy. So when he was, it was like I love. And then Bill Burr was great.
Yep.
From Space Boston, you know, and he's got the little, he's even got the little thing that like the if you got the Dash Rendar action figure. It came with that. So that, that little gun that comes out of his backpack.
Yep.
So as a fanboy, I'm like, oh, it's the little Dash Rendar gun that comes out of your backpack. And the moment, like the moment where everything turns and like Mando is stalking them. I mean, that was a great episode.
Yeah, that was fun. That was, yeah. All eight of these episodes have such great moments. And at the end of this, when I finished watching these eight episodes, I felt like I had eight separate yet connected adventures within the Star Wars universe that didn't get bogged down by Jedi or Sith religion bullshit. Because let's face it, the Jedi and the Sith, they're two separate sort of religions, but they're also meshed together.
Yeah, from what I understand of the history, they started together.
So. Right. And then they split off and evil, good, red, blue, green, purple, whatever. Let's see here. What else? we are going to be doing separate music episodes because I love the music from this series. The music is
so good.
It's so fucking good. It really is. Ludwig Göransson. This is the first time I had ever seen his name.
Me too. Me too.
And I'm going and I'm looking at his discography, and I'm thinking, holy crap, I don't remember. Like, he did a couple of EPs by himself, but once he started into films and television, because he like I said, he does his own. But like, he did the music for Marley and Me in 2008. He did Jennifer's Body, 30 Minutes or Less. We Are the Millers, Merry Friggin' Christmas, Top 5, Creed, Central Intelligence, and then it gets into the Star Wars stuff. And it's like the music that they created for this, and like I said, we're going to have whole separate music episodes, but just the theme, the first episode, as soon as I heard those notes, I'm like, okay, I don't care what happens in this show. As long as that's the music, I'm going to love this.
Well, I mean, like, as kind of a combined thing, like I love how the end credits have the production art, and like I will sit there and I will, after, like, particularly the first time around, I will watch the credits and I will listen to the music and I will look at the production art because it's so cool.
Yeah, so
it's
nice.
It's such a great package.
Yep.
And then also, like, the one unequivocally good thing I think we can say about Book of Boba Fett is I love the theme. Like, that is a Western theme.
Yeah, I need to revisit that because I never really.
It's like the prequels. The music is good.
Okay.
The music is good.
But I mean, just that. Again, you have a character like Din Djarin, like the Mandalorian. Well, Din Djarin and Mandalorian, same character, but like, you have that character, and you need a theme for that character, and this is what he came up with. I'm like, okay, whatever you do in the future, I need to be following you because I love that. Funny fact about me, folks, 11 years ago, there was an animated film that came out starring not Jim Cummings.
Winnie the Pooh.
No, yes.
He's in Peoria this weekend.
Oh, is he? Fun.
I think so. Like, we went to the show in Springfield and there was like a thing for like a show in Peoria and it said Jim Cummings.
Oh, nice. Awesome. I meant Sheldon, Jim Parsons, in 2013. It was an animated film called Home, and he played this little character, whatever. That was the first film I noticed. Oh, what's his name? God.
I don't know Home. I can't help you.
Yeah, no, I know you. Lorne Balfe. Lorne has done Mission Impossible music. He's done a bunch of other stuff. But we have all these awesome composers that we're just now finding because of stuff that they're doing that's in stuff that we like. Like Lauren did a bunch of other stuff. We'll talk about that another time. But yeah, we're going to do whole separate episodes on the music of Mando. But that theme for Mando, man, that just got me into this show overall.
Oh yeah, there's a guy on YouTube who does like covers and stuff like that, and he has done, he's done it. He's done the Mandalorian theme medieval style. He's done it in Mongolian style, which is really kind of cool.
That's awesome.
It's heavier drums and it's got that throat.
Yep.
It's really cool. Like it's a great theme.
Yeah, absolutely fun, and that's what we kind of needed for this.
It's kind of the template of what they I think for the movies they had to do a sequel trilogy.
Yeah,
we'll get to that when we get to that.
Yeah,
but I think for Star Wars as a brand, you have to branch out from the Galactic Civil War and the Jedi and the Skywalkers.
Because what were we saying in 1997 when they released the new cuts or the different
special
cuts?
Editions?
In 1997, I was 17 years old. I remember everything I said about the original Star Wars. I want to go back. I want to see the Clone War. I want to know what the hell happened before Luke's adventure. Like, in Star Wars, we've already gone through all this, but, Ben mentions the Clone Wars this. And then we get the prequel trilogy, and it is what it is, but I love that kind of stuff, so I'm loving that here as well. Like, we're getting these little pockets of things that is not really connected to the other major thing of what the universe is built on.
As I said, I think it's a pretty big universe that you can do stuff with, and it doesn't have to be tied to this one story. And that is something that I think media always struggles with, because Lord of the Rings is the same thing, where it's got this huge, expansive world, but at the same time, it's always tied around the War of the Ring. But it's I think, because, in Empire Strikes Back, my favorite, as I said, I love Bosk. I love the interesting thing about Empire Strikes Back is it's the one of the original movies that doesn't have the big cantina scene. Star Wars has a cantina scene, and Jedi has Jabba's palace.
Yep.
And there are a couple of random aliens in the background of Bespin,
yep.
And the Ugnaughts, and Chewbacca. I always get yelled at because I forget that Chewbacca's an alien. I don't forget. it's just he's the main character, so it doesn't really count as an alien to me.
Yeah, exactly.
But the bounty hunters are, I think because there's so few of them, they're very memorable. And the idea of bounty hunting, which is a complicated profession, but that's a perfect setup for a great series, because you're always going somewhere. There's always a new antagonist. There's always, and it was a brilliant idea for a series, because you can always be on a different planet. Again, this is why I get annoyed that they keep going back to Navarro. This is why I don't like Moff Gideon, because as a bounty hunter, you can find a new bad guy every week. You can go to a new planet every week. It's so inherently expansive. And I think the problem is that as they went along, they shrunk rather than expand.
Yeah, unfortunately. And we will get to that, obviously. But it's one of those things where we were talking about Moff Gideon earlier, and you had mentioned, obviously, Gus Fring from Breaking Bad. I was half waiting at some point, not necessarily this first season, but in this entire series, I was waiting for Moff Gideon's face to melt off.
I will say his entrance is fantastic because we see a TIE fighter land.
Yes.
And as a lifelong Star Wars fan, that blew my goddamn mind. Because we see in a couple of films, and I think we even see in one of the later maybe Mandalorians. They're usually depicted as hanging from racks, and you go on a gangplank and you climb down from the rack. So we've never seen a TIE fighter, you never even think a TIE fighter is going to land. So I was like, Jesus Christ!
And that's another thing about Star Wars that I will say, and I will say this in probably any episode that we have, even though we didn't have any X-Wings or TIE fighters in this, but
we had a TIE fighter! It landed!
Yeah, no, all right.
Another thing that blew my mind was they had the little Kenner troop transport. in live action. I was like, oh my god, it's a Kenner Troop transport.
And I think that's all. Yeah, it's all Favreau.
Yeah, but this is for a fanboy. This is just a smorgasbord.
Mm-hmm. That's why Iron Man is so good. That's why we have the entire cinematic universe of Marvel is because of Jon Favreau. Because of Iron Man.
It can because Jon Favreau
started
some pretty big dice and cast Robert Downey Jr.
Well, yeah.
And that was like perfect casting. But some people might not remember Downey like had destroyed his life and made himself toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a hell of a risk to hire him for anything at that point.
Yep. There are exactly I'm gonna have to look at the in between on this. There are two films that I remember watching that were Robert Downey Jr.'s films. 1989's Chances Are with him and Cybill Shepherd, where he's Louie and he dies in the thing and becomes like a ghost kind of thing. And then Iron Man. Anything in between there, I'm like, oh crap, he kind of went and did some stuff and almost ruined his life and whatever.
I mean again, I'm older than you, so I remember remember he was the sidekick in Back to School. He was in Less Than Zero. I mean, he had Chaplin. He was on a season of Saturday Night Live. And my mother was a huge Ally McBeal fan. And he's in a season of that as the romantic interest. And then Framton Jansen is his like ex-girlfriend. Mm-hmm. So he chose wisely in the end. I would watch some of that, and he was amazing in that show. And then he got caught for something, and because this was during his troubles. So this was like a comeback for him, and he screwed it up, and he got kicked off the show, and I was like, that sucks. But it sucked that he got kicked off the show, and then like I said, it was a hell of a roll of the dice, and it paid. Again, he was the absolute right guy for the job. Mm-hmm. I cannot think of a single actor who would have made. I know they're talking Tom Cruise, but Cruise wouldn't have had the vulnerability that Robert Downey Jr. had.
Cruise, yeah. we could do a whole other episode on Cruise.
No,
it's fine. We
don't
can.
Don't be bad. I don't want to cause trouble.
No, you're not causing any trouble. Yeah, like, and I think I even saw. I think they leaked or they released or whatever some sort of screen test or whatever with Cruise, and it's not the same.
No,
because it doesn't have what Mr. Downey Jr. has, which is subtlety, like. When he does when the missiles are being fired and he does the kind of like the Jesus stance with his arms coming up and you see all the dust and like, oh God, that's very Tony Stark like that. And no one else could have done that.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it's a difference. Like Tom Cruise can do cocky, but he's cocky as cocky. And, and Robert Downey Jr. did cocky as, I'm covering because I'm damaged.
Yeah.
Like even before he was injured, he's a damaged person.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's I always go back to whenever I'm talking about why I don't like certain later Marvel movies. It's because you go back to the original Iron Man and you go back to that final fight and he is on the back foot of that entire fight. He's outclassed. He's outgunned. His arc reactor is the old one from Afghanistan built with scraps. Like he's never at an advantage, and that makes it exciting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you watch some of these other, I'm not going to name names because they've been beaten up by plenty of guys in the past, but like you watch some of these other movies and the characters are basically like Superman beating up on like just random mortal people. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is not exciting. This is boring.
Yeah.
This is special effects and you're just smacking around people that can't possibly hurt or threaten you. Yawn.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of heroism. That's part of the excitement. That's part of why we love heroes is because they face challenges that they might, you know that Iron Man's not going to die, except he did. But, you know, they're facing challenges that even they might not be able to beat.
Right.
That makes it exciting.
Absolutely. I completely agree.
A good filmmaker makes you believe that they could lose. Even though you kind of know they're not gonna, but you believe that maybe they could. Like, and how are they? That's the thing, is it's always how are they gonna do that? How are they gonna get out of that? You know, like I remember when we were talking about Jurassic Park, I was like, I know the kids aren't gonna die. I know Spielberg's not gonna have a Velociraptor like eat a kid on screen, mm-hmm. how are they getting out of that kitchen?
Exactly.
The filmmaker gets you to go, how are they going to do that? Like, and, you know, like, I guess there's, when they're trapped in the bar at the end of Mandalorian, you're like, okay, how are they going to get out of this?
Mm-hmm.
To bring it back on point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say one last thing about Iron Man, though. Before Robert Downey Jr., there was only one voice that I remember as Iron Man, and it was Hayes. Very, yeah, Robert Hayes in the
Robert
94.
Hayes, my bad. From
He voiced Iron Man in the 94 to 96 series.
I know who it was.
So that was the story.
Like, since we're doing Iron Man anyway, funny story. Yeah. So I mentioned that my mom loved Ally McBeal, and she loved that season with Robert Downey Jr. And so we went to go. She wanted to go see Iron Man. My mom never liked my stuff. She never liked Star Wars. She never liked comic books. She never liked any of that stuff, right?
Right.
But she really wanted to see Iron Man because of Robert Downey Jr. And she enjoyed it. Like, she liked it a lot, actually. And I remember she got really pissed off at me because I made her stay through the credits because I wanted to see
the scene.
I wanted to see Nick Fury.
Yeah.
But I remember one day I came over and she's watching TV, and I swear to God, she's watching the goddamn Iron Man cartoon. And I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, I'm watching Iron Man. And it's like, do you understand anything that's going on?
Uh-huh.
Remember, it's like, it's the one with Spider-Woman.
Yep.
Like the Secret War Spider-Woman. And the Mandarin is green.
Yep.
It was just funny that she liked that. She liked that movie so much that she was watching the Iron Man cartoon.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Mandalorian, Star Wars, very, very awesome. Season one, very good. Enjoy it every time. This is only the second time I've gone back to watch it. Obviously, watched it as it aired, when it originally aired in 2019, 17 million years ago because of COVID, whatever. But this second time watching it through, I still really, really enjoyed it overall. And even though I know it kind of goes the Looney Tunes route when we get to season three, especially that end. Oh, God, no. But season two, we will get there and all that good stuff. We're going to take a quick break. You're going to hear some ads and some other stuff. You're going to hear some podcast ads, actually. I always put podcast ads in, but we have moved away from the previous place we were hosted at. And, folks, no more major stupid ads that are gonna interrupt conversation or anything else. Like we're talking about Iron Man and all of a sudden there's a Cialis commercial that comes on and interrupts my voice or whatever, so no more of that bullshit. That's done. But all these podcast ads that I have in here, I think y'all should check them all out, and we'll come back with our rating and last words right after this.
Hello, geeks and geekettes! Looking for a podcast that covers a vast array of topics? Then check out Altered Geek Unleashed, where we discuss our thoughts on this week's geeky news, tech, gaming, television shows, movies, cartoons, comics, and more. So, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks, every Friday on the GeekCast Radio Network.
Because the world needs another movie podcast.
The GeekCast Radio Network presents for your listening pleasure, The Cinema Geek.
Hosted by Amanda, Kevin, Matt, and Dan.
Each week we dive headfirst in the landscape of movies as we discuss movie news, play movie games,
go in-depth on reviews,
and even have a top 10 countdown or two.
Also, don't miss our director retrospective series, where we review noted directors' movies film by film.
Bottom line is, if you love movies and love podcasts, you need to experience The Cinema Geeks.
You can find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, or geekcastradio.com.
For the best in science fiction, join Mark Baumgarten, Vicky Jakubowski, Zion Kiros, and Juan San Miguel on the award-winning podcast, Marku 42's Universe. Doctor Who, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Star Trek, and more are all fair game with Marku 42, which has been around since 2012 in one form or another. Marku 42's Universe is proud to be a part of GeekCast Radio Network, the best place to get your geek on. Listen to us bi-weekly or weekly if we have a topic relevant for you, our listeners. Marku 42 on GeekCast Radio Network, a match made in a galaxy near you.
Hi, I'm Dan, and I'm the host of the Rock Nerd Radio Show, which airs live on HudsonRiverRadio.com every Wednesday evening at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It also gets backed up as a podcast, which you can find on your preferred podcasting platform. Every week on my show, I talk about all kinds of pop culture. I talk about music. I talk about movies, TV, comics, collectibles, and so much more. I also feature a guest on my show periodically, which you might enjoy. I have a couple of special segments on my show, one called The Cover Song of the Week and My Favorite Thing in the World This Week. If you think this sounds cool, check it out sometime. I hope you do.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk...
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Download this show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
All right, folks. Studio 2009 episode. What the hell episode is this? I don't even remember anymore. Yeah. Whatever episode it is episode 85 of Studio 2009. 0 to 5 on the GCRN rating scale. You can use half points if you'd like. But what would you rate Mando season one, Dave?
Oh, season one. Like we said, nothing's ever quite perfect. So, it's a five. A five. I'm going to give it a five. I loved it. It was what I wanted from Star Wars.
Yeah. And I agree with that. And I am also going to give it a five, only because I'm not blind to the things that may be wrong with it or nitpicky or whatever.
Yeah, no. But it's not a nuanced scale. Right. So.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no. I mean, it's one of those things where if I take a half point off and give it a 4.5, it's because there was one thing that kind of stuck out to me. Like, that's kind of a sore thumb. I overall still enjoy it, but I could do without that one thing. And if we go lower and lower and lower, it just gets worse and worse and worse. I mean, I don't think we've ever, since we've had our rating system, which I think we've had it since 2015, I don't think we've ever given anything a zero, which is just the absolute worst. You would never watch it again, obviously. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there was nothing in this that I didn't enjoy. It took me to a galaxy far, far away, and I just absolutely really, really dug it.
I'm like, I feel bad. I didn't talk enough about Quill. I love Quill. Mm-hmm. I'm not, spoken. Like, I was genuinely kind of unhappy that they killed him off, because I love that character.
I wish they didn't kill him off, but yeah. I kind of get it.
Oh, I mean, somebody had to be sacrificed. I get it.
Yeah. And heaven
probably for Nick Nolte. Nick Nolte probably ain't cheap.
Well, yeah, that's the truth. And again, it's just it wasn't him in makeup, thankfully. It's just his voice that's the character. And that's what I love about these puppets 40 years ago and puppets now. I love the crafting of how they can create these characters. And obviously the characters aren't real, they're fictional, whatever, but they do this stuff of it's like cosplay kind of thing. You know, you put all this stuff together and you have this costume and you're this, that, and anything. And then you get somebody like Nick Nolte to do the voice of the character, or you get somebody like whomever, insert Peter Cullen here, whatever kind of thing to do the thing. And yeah, absolutely. I loved Quill. I remember after he said his lines,
I have spoken.
This is the way I, those two lines, I know this is the way, it wasn't his line, but it's the Mandalorian thing. But those two lines, I remember no one could not say them after this first, like it was everywhere. The easiest way to end an argument with anybody is I have spoken. But yeah, no, absolutely enjoyed that. That was so fun. And again, it was kind of like a, even though Din is not a Luke character, but it was kind of like Din Djarin, and then you have Quill here, sort of. He's kind of making Din learn things, but not really.
He taught him how to write a blurb.
Yep. I really did dig that. And season one of Mando, overall, 8 episodes, some of the best television I've seen in years. Honestly, absolutely enjoyed it. Like, we need more space stuff like this in TV, I think. Yep, absolutely. All right, folks, thank you for joining us here inside the studio. If you'd like to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on all of our content, as well as listen to it and everything else. Send an email to feedback@geekcastradio.com. You can check us out on all the podcatching clients you choose to use. I prefer Spotify, but that's just me. Follow us on, it's X now, but most people still call it Twitter, @GeekcastRadioNetwork, @ITSSTUDIO, Studio 2, it's Studio 2009 for the show. I am @TFG and Mike. You can become a fan on Facebook by going to facebook.com/GeekcastRadioNetwork. You can also check out Studio 2009 Podcast over there, as well as joining the Toy World Order fans group. That's where you can see Dave and do all kinds of interacting with Dave if you'd like. And what are you posting in there? What's your latest post in the Toy World Order world?
I believe I mentioned one of the times you brought this up that I hardly ever post there anymore. Because, I mean, like, Toy World Order is gone.
I know. So.
I don't post much. Like, on my own Facebook page, I posted a review of Godzilla Minus One because it finally came out on Netflix.
Yeah, it did. Next episode, episode 86, folks, we are going back to video games. As late last year, I launched another Origin series, and it's all about people and their video game stories. And the first story of the Phillips brothers. We're going to get Steve Megatron's story in episode 86, and then after that, I think it's back to Star Wars stuff with myself and Dave. For now, I am TFG and Mike with...
Dave Draper.
You'll hear us back in the studio soon.
Oh, I've got a bad feeling about this.